You just heard music from Matthew Sweet from his album Altered Beasts. The name of the song is Dinosaur Act. That's the lead track on that record, a record that was the follow-up to Matthew's landmark and breakthrough album Girlfriend, which was the subject of the first part of our interview. Here in the second part of the interview, we are going to focus on Altered Beasts here at its 20th anniversary. And once again, our guest in the studio is Matthew Sweet here with us at KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot. You'd mentioned in the first part of our interview how some of the songs were very much related to kind of how you were reacting to the success of Girlfriend. I was wondering if the process for kind of, because you recorded everything for Girlfriend, the record came out, and then you had kind of the slow build of its success, and then you probably, I would think, started working on Altered Beast. Was it kind of in the midst of that success?
It was in the midst, yeah. And,
okay.
And weirdly, instead of resting, which I terribly needed to do, we went right into recording it. So I was especially kind of a live wire of everything I'd been experiencing. And even the title, Altered Beast, you know, comes from this video game where, like, you know, the people turn into a monster or whatever animal turns into the monster that you have to kill.
Yeah.
And I just sort of felt this monsterness. Really, it was myself, you know, that just was like, I don't know, that time, like I said, I just felt sort of split personality. Like, I'll either be the monster guy or I'll be the guy who's more sensitive. And that sort of defined Altered Beast a little bit. You know, Dinosaur Act was the monster. And, you know, someone to pull the trigger was the human. you know, and you could go through anything and probably I could probably categorize them. I didn't, you know, at the time or anything. It was just a time of kind of craziness and excess and Richard Dashett trying to get a handle on my insanity. We became great friends during that. He was amazing and really a great person to be friends with when I was going through what I was going through. And it was an amazing experience, and I got to work with lots of people I'd never worked with and really hang more at a studio than I'd ever kind of done. And it was in Los Angeles. We recorded it at a place called Sunset Sound Studio, which is, I believe, still there on Selmer, right in Hollywood. And it was the time I was falling in love with California. I was learning all about the different areas and all the different things you could do out here. And Dashett was perfect for that. He had the dream view of the old, you know, Hollywood movies, kind of that whole scene with music, you know, because he'd really lived through the whole 70s thing with Fleetwood Mac. And so he really turned me on to L.A. in a really positive way. My record company was really nearby, and they were, you know, just anything you want, you know, kind of point right then.
Yeah.
Because Girlfriend had been successful, and they were a very small label, so it meant a lot to them. And I was big fish in a small pond there. So it was a time where I had a lot of support from the label, and I could do whatever I wanted, and I was, you know, only sort of together mentally and kind of drinking a lot and sort of substance-y, that record.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit of kind of stuff going on.
The record in some ways has kind of like a, like it's a record with a bad reputation or something. It's like Girlfriend's evil twin is the way
it is dirty. I kind of felt like that. It had this thing that, and I kind of meant for it to be that way. Maybe I kind of felt like I needed to show people that I wasn't just sweet love guy or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of extended my horribleness or whatever. It also quickly became known as this sort of not as good as Girlfriend. So it was a weird time for me. Also, the reaction to it.
Yeah.
Because it was the not as good as Girlfriend. And it sold incredibly well for, you know, now or whatever. It just wasn't instantly, you know, a gold record. It is, I'm sure, now, because it got pretty close in its day. But compared to Girlfriend, it just wasn't as big. And it was moody and weirder, and probably got weird. People probably didn't know exactly what to make of it. I don't really know what the reviews were like for it, but looking back, as I meet people now and over the last 10 years doing interviews and things, big fans often are really into Altered Beast, so it's kind of cool. It had knowing people. You know, it was like, I don't like knowing people. I don't like anyone knowing about me. It's sort of like something Quine would have said.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one day I was at a gas station in New Jersey, and I heard a guy was in his truck getting gas, and he had Knowing People on, just super loud. And I was just like, that's awesome that I did music like that. It's in someone's car. So, I mean, I was glad that I did weird stuff, but I wasn't very focused as a person. It was a little all over the place and just getting a feel for what the hell was happening.
It is. It's fascinating to me in terms of, you know, the way the two records are. I share that sentiment that I think Girlfriend is a fantastic record, and it's an amazing record, but Altered Beast in some ways, like, I don't know how exactly to describe it. Kind of like I feel Altered Beast a little more.
Yeah, it's
moody. Like it digs you know, into you, yeah, in a
really
different
moody
way.
Moody and kind of nasty sometimes.
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot of weird things probably get said on it.
But there's a kind of quality to it, and it doesn't seem like this was conscious in any way, but one of the things that's always been interesting to me about the record is it seems like almost like some of the songs are almost like mirrors or like sequels to songs from Girlfriend in some ways. Like Don't Go, it seems like the mirror of Do It Again, or You Don't Love Me and Someone to Pull the Trigger, Nothing Lasts, and Evergreen, especially because they both close the records and are very similarly styled.
Uh-huh.
And I think that in my mind, this couldn't possibly be the case, but this is just letting you in on kind of
right.
a fan interpreting the songs. Because of that kind of similarities between those other songs, it's like I always saw a kind of connection between Divine Intervention and Dinosaur Act, where it really felt to me like it was... like there was this kind of religious element in it, almost like it was like the second coming and Jesus was coming back to kick some ass.
Well, you know, also a clue on that record, we used those voiceovers from Caligula.
Yeah.
And that was because Dashett would quote from that movie all the time to me in the studio, you know. And it was really him and Mick Fleetwood had this whole shtick together of kind of like the minions and all this stuff. And and so it was just funny. It was just like a laugh of somebody being so crazed and full of themselves they think they're God or whatever.
Yeah, there
and
you go.
To me, that fit, I can see now, just it fit with the whole idea of what is being famous and what power you might get from it and what you use it for and all those things. I mean, I wasn't sitting thinking I'm famous, but as I look at it now, I can see that, you know, sort of in it. All those questioning things, and even Dinosaur Act, it's kind of a sarcastic thing. I'm coming back with my Dinosaur Act, and I always love the, we call old rock bands Dinosaur Acts.
Yeah.
The other thing that blows my mind related to both Girlfriend and Altered Beast is that at that time, rock history seemed like, to me, it had been so long, it was fully documented with a million billion great people. You know, we knew the Beatles, we knew everything from the 70s, all those things. And what amazes me now is how little time had passed since the 60s
at
that time.
Yeah, that's actually true, yeah.
You know what I mean? Compared to, like, what I felt like it was, it was practically like rock was new compared to now, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel really blessed to have been in that time, kind of, because it was before it just would have become so hard to ever get your head up over the masses, you know, because now it's just everyone in the world makes a record and has a band, you
know?
So I feel like I was lucky it was before I had to compete with every single human on earth.
And another one of the similarities or kind of connections between Altered Beast and Girlfriend, the sequencing also is you know, really interesting. You were talking about the fact that you have these little snippets from Caligula. One of them is labeled the intro, though it comes in the middle of the record, as opposed to you'd think the introduction would be at the beginning of the record, but it's actually at the middle, so almost kind of like the introduction to the second side.
Yeah.
But still, in the middle is when you get the intro.
They probably were like, you can't put that first or something. I probably wanted to put it first, you know.
It would have been fantastic. When you think about it, it actually really thematically works really well with Dinosaur Act.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's probably where we had it. I mean, honestly, I don't remember, but but I'm with you.
Yeah, and there the other thing is there are two different versions of the same song on this record. You do The Ugly Truth in two different instances. One is much more aggressive, more of a rocking one. That was the one that ended up being the single and the video was made
and
for.
Richard Lloyd played on it.
Yeah,
and then there was
the other Ugly Truth.
Uh-huh.
Which had a little more of kind of like not quite a country feel, more kind of like a birds kind of feel.
It was a country rock type thing, and it had Quine on it, who's a birds freak.
There you go.
We got Byron Berline to play fiddle on it, and it was something where I think my manager Russell actually was like, "You have to put both versions on it." You know, I was like, "Really?" Because they couldn't really, nobody could decide which one they kind of liked better. You know, so.
Yeah, that was one of the things and they both fit really nicely because one's kind of on one side of the record and one's on the other side of the record.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of sets the mood and the tone a little differently between the two sides.
Yeah, that song's pretty blunt. It's kind of like a divine intervention kind of song or something. This is how it is.
Yeah, but like a lot of the songs that have a bit of a more kind of darker theme that you've done, in some ways kind of couching them in sweet melodies and some instant, like it changes how people kind of come to it. It seems like, you know,
I can see that.
Yeah. And just like, you know, we gotten you to play a couple songs from Girlfriend in the first part of the interview. I was wondering if we could get you to play, I guess now a third version of, Ugly Truth, just a strip down.
This is going
to
be the one right now.
So just a stripped down acoustic version,
right.
A stripped down acoustic version of Ugly Truth here for you, performed in our studios by Matthew Sweet with his friend and musician Paul Chastain here for you on KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pot.
Don't want to die, but living gets you down. We want you to act like nothing's wrong, even though you heard a sound. And then you ripped right out of the ground like a fucking root. Oh, you simply cannot hide from the ugly truth. You must be wise, 'cause you could find yourself among a sea of smiling faces. It's a way I never felt. Oh, kind of flies right into my face and out the other side. Oh, the ugly truth leaves nothing to the side. The ugly truth makes every one of us alive. Ugly. If you can dig a big enough hole to bury all you lose, no, you still won't be prepared for the ugly truth. No, you'll never be prepared for the ugly truth. No, you simply cannot hide from the ugly truth. Ugly.
So you just heard a stripped down acoustic version of The Ugly Truth here at KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pot. We're here in the studios talking to Matthew Sweet about his album Altered Beast, which is celebrating a 20th anniversary this year. Another of the record or songs on this record, and maybe of all the songs that you've written, I think Time Capsule might be my absolute favorite.
Ah, that's great.
And I always tell people in talking about Girlfriend that I feel like the song Girlfriend is about as perfect a kind of like power pop song as you could get.
Wow.
And Time Capsule to me seems like also like a nearly perfect just pop gem. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the song. It seems like you're about like 26, 27 or so when you were writing this. So kind of close to, I would think, like high school reunion period of time. I didn't know if it was kind of connected more to personal experiences, or had you read an article about Time Capsule getting dug up, or where did it come from?
The phrase popped up, I don't know, when I was writing the song, I guess, and it just sort of became about this thing that it would all, I don't know, I guess I think of it a little bit like the guy's delusional that's sort of singing it, and he feels like, okay, it's not going to work right now, but we'll save it just like it is, and eventually it will work, or something, I guess, sort of the sentiment.
Huh.
But it's also the idea of time passing, you know, like time is obsessed with time. There's a lot of time in all my things, like over the years, there's lots of time references, because, you know, it's the thing we don't have enough of or whatever. So, I think I felt a great amount of melancholy and stuff when I was really very young and not far enough, like most people would be, to feel that, I guess, you know. But for me, I felt pretty old, which is why it was perfectly natural for me to say, once we were young and strong, and now everything's gone or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't have any of that. It's just a memory that's packed into this thing that someday I may be able to access that time capsule of whatever.
Yeah.
But again, it wasn't something I thought a lot about at the time. It's actually amazingly coherent for how little I planned it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, from talking to people and doing interviews with songwriters, it's for non-musicians, I think it's surprising how often that happens with great songs, that it really is, you know, kind of a spur of the moment thing. It's not you know, I got to sit down and do the work of songwriting,
I think,
and it came out.
To me, over the years doing interviews, that's the biggest misconception. I think people just, they think, and I'm sure there are writers that do write more like nuts and boltsy kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it just has to be an emotional thing, or I just don't care. You know what I mean? If I just make up some things and try to plan it, it just isn't as good as that fresh meat kind of thing, you know?
And is it a situation where we're kind of like you might be, you know, like putting in gas or mowing the lawn or having a sandwich, and like the thoughts just kind of come
could.
In?
Yeah, very easily. I more nowadays, and even then I probably did it. If I got a phrase or a word or something, I might write just that down.
Mm.
Most often way back, I had music first.
Yeah.
These days, I think my mind just prepares for lyrics a little more, and I save up little bits of ideas and scraps in a notebook, and then when I'm writing again, I have some things I can attach if I want to.
Okay.
You know. But a lot of the words just came from the sound of the melody at the time, going, "This comes out," you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it builds in little places, finding what I need there and there and there.
All right. Could we get you to perform Time Capsule for us here?
Absolutely.
All right. Fantastic. This is Matthew Sweet, along with Paul Chastain, performing Time Capsule here at KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pot.
Stop what you're doing to me, my love. Don't wanna see. Then we were young and strong. Now in a time capsule. Dream what you want me to be, then come and dig for me. Then we were young and strong. Now everything is wrong, so wrong. Did you want me? Did you need me? Could you not say you believe me? And our love is in a time capsule. Dig it up. Love is in a time capsule. Dig it up. Dig it up. Dig it up.
You just heard the song Time Capsule from Matthew Sweet, performed live in our studios. One of the songs from the album Altered Beast, which is what we are talking about here at the 20th anniversary of the record. Though Time Capsule may be my favorite song on the album, I think that the song from your really quite prolific career of songwriting that I think is maybe the best song is Someone to Pull the Trigger.
I love that song. Yeah. I might agree with you on that.
I know a lot
of people.
I really
had a lot of dark feeling when I wrote that song. I just felt sort of lost and freaked out.
a lot of people take this song as a very dark song. It might be a comment on my own sensibilities and just how dark I am that I think this way. But I've always actually thought of this as like a really amazingly romantic song. If you don't take it too literally, if you think about it more metaphorically,
yeah,
and
like,
think about the metaphors,
leap with me.
Metaphors of love. That this is somebody who is. It sounds to me almost. It sounds a lot like kind of the person who is singing "You Don't Love Me" on Girlfriend. That they're at their wit's end and they need somebody. They want somebody. They want someone.
But it's almost
desperation.
Like I want someone to put me out of my misery.
Yeah.
It's a desperate call for love.
Yeah.
It is kind of, you know.
Yeah.
That one was just a dark, deep thing. And we recorded it for a BBC recording in London for a radio thing.
Before you actually did it for the record?
Before I made Altered Beast. And in fact, I made them get the tracks from the BBC and we used them for that, which maybe we shouldn't have. I don't know. So it kind of stayed a lot like sort of the only demo we'd ever made of it.
Mm.
I know Dashett wanted me to do a new version and I didn't. I probably should have. But then maybe it wouldn't be the same
if
I did. So it is what it is. But yeah, I love that song. It's very dark. I would also name it as one of my favorites. It just came out of the blue, out of sheer feeling of just being kind of overwhelmed at the time.
Mm. Why don't we take a listen to that song, one of the many great songs that is on this record, Altered Beast. Someone to Pull the Trigger is the name of this one from Matthew Sweet that you're hearing on KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pot.
Ooh.
That one just takes the cake because you can take it. You can take it literally, and from everything I'd read about it beforehand, you know, it's the song that most people seemed like were drawn to. And talking about someone to pull the trigger from the album Altered Beast, it seems like in some ways that was a song that a lot of, especially critics and writers, were really drawn to, just because there weren't a lot of songs. In a literal way or metaphorical way that would talk about love, kind of love as suicide or love as assisted suicide or however you wanted to see it.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, it's still these 20 years later, still is a pretty rare and unique kind of sensibility that you wrapped into that song.
Yeah, and kind of risky, I guess.
Yeah,
to, like,
very much so.
I would often think, God, will someone shoot me now? And then I was kind of like, well, that's the idea. I'd be glad if they do.
Yeah.
It was strong stuff, and I was proud of it because it wasn't like, here are the hits after Girlfriend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was totally like, here's music I felt like doing and screw you all. It didn't make the label that happy. But amazingly, later on, because I had Sick of Myself, like, you know, we had a whole nother big round like Girlfriend. So that really helped.
And it's one of those songs, you know, we talked about kind of themes with these two records, and the kind of theme of loss and kind of desperation potentially connected to suicide or to death seems a lot stronger on Altered Beast than it did on Girlfriend, especially with the songs Reaching Out and Evergreen. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about both of them, even though with those in particular, you know, the subject matter seems to be really heavy, but there's such a tenderness to the way that the songs are carried out that it again, it's one of those things about this record,
sort of
about those songs that
mitigates the darkness a little bit
in some ways.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there are not a lot of songs when you deal with loss or like if you're someone who's had a lot of loss or you've had people taken away from you, there are songs that may remind you of that person or remind, you know, something along those lines. But there are not a lot of songs that are very much about kind of being in that moment or in the processing those kind of things.
Yeah, I often thought of stuff or think of things in terms of music as like an emotional moment. Mm-hmm. You know, I always loved songs. I always cared more about melancholy kind of songs because you get a feeling from them. Besides just, oh, this is a fun song to be bopping to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a chord happens or a melody thing happens and it sort of hurts a little bit. You know, you get that kind of feeling. And so I really wanted that kind of thing to be in my music. So I didn't shy away from exploring those feelings. Once again, where the lyrics might have gone, I almost, you know, I would have to go back almost and listen to those two songs to really say a lot intelligently about them, but I remember the impression of it. I once played Evergreen live at a big show in a theater in Chicago, And it was like, God, one of the scariest things I'd ever done. I haven't done, now I'm used to it on Girlfriend because I do Nothing Lasts, but that was a moody song that people liked, and there were a few of those Smog Moon.
Why do you think it was so, why was this so scary? Just the kind of emotions that were in it, and I know you talked about earlier how in some ways it, performing these songs and sometimes is kind of draining because just the kind of like emotional weight of them.
It's just you feel them, you know? I don't know. Yeah. And for me, I feel me when I feel them kind of. So it's just kind of a re-experiencing of things you marked once, you know what I mean? And it's just sort of, I don't know. I guess that's why it's the good thing sort of because I can really just get in a dream state and do the album and it's meaningful for me to do it, you know, for just me. So hopefully that carries on and people can sort of feel that that thing is in the songs and I'm here to keep trying to deliver it, you know?
Yeah. Why don't we actually just listen to Evergreen right now from Altered Beasts. This is the song that closes out the record, Evergreen, from Matthew Sweet, and you're listening to it right now on KPFK 90.7 FM and Melting Pot.
Baby, you know they took you away. Put your little hands together and you started to pray. But all your prayers, they brought no answer. Your faith was a lie. There's no difference between the earth and the sky. There's no reason we have to die. Whenever you talk that way, you know you're breaking my heart. How can we ever come together when we're playing these parts? Every love, there is a promise. So baby, don't you cry, 'cause there's no difference between the earth and the sky. We have to don't you cry. There's no difference between the earth and the sky. There's no reason we have to die. Thank you.
I always thought Altered Beast was a really fantastic album, and it took me a little while to kind of warm up to it immediately coming after a Girlfriend, but for a long period of time, I've actually thought it was a better record than Girlfriend in some respects. I think I've listened to Altered Beast more than I've listened to Girlfriend, maybe because the songs were much more complex thematically. There were so many different moods.
Uh-huh.
I know not everyone felt that way. We kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but I wanted to know just how you feel about Altered Beast, especially in comparison to the success of Girlfriend.
I feel great about Altered Beast. Altered Beast, I made just what I wanted to make. It was weird and had all my feelings in it and everything. And like anything, it's amazing and wonderful that anybody remembers it or it mattered then or now to anybody. So for me, you know, I like Altered Beast. It was a no compromise kind of situation where I just did whatever I was feeling like. Everybody was real supportive. I probably could have taken some time off, but I didn't. And but other than that, you know, I was doing what I like to do, and I'd certainly been trying for many years to be able to. So I was thrilled that, like, at least I knew I'd make another record, like I keep saying.
You know, I think that's one of the things that I've always respected about the work that you've done over these, you know, 20 plus years since Girlfriend. So I feel like it would have been really easy, especially now that we've kind of seen more of your body of work, and you really are really prolific. I mean, you put out a record almost like every couple of years. In some cases, original material, sometimes covers, but right. there's been a lot of material from you
over
these past 20 years.
I feel like I don't do enough, kind of, you know? I don't know why.
I think that's just because you have so many songs kind of rolling around in you.
I guess so.
I think it for somebody who writes songs, as many songs as you and as many good songs as you do, it seems like it would have been really easy to follow up Girlfriend with a bunch of Girlfriend kind of songs.
Yeah.
Like just kind of replicating that first half again and again.
I really consciously didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I didn't go back with the same group of people or anything.
Yeah.
I can look back and go, wow, it probably would have been great to make another album because we all knew each other and it would have been kick-ass. Even Altered Beast would have been kick-ass with them. But it just was... I went fully different way. I just thought now's my chance to learn some shit from some different people, and I just went for it, tried something totally different. And it was like a time when just if I went, what if Richard Dashett works on it with me? And they're like, okay, you know, and
yeah.
I want to, you know, do this or that. Okay, we'll try and get that animation from Japan. I'm like, kick ass. All right.
And it's something that I think when you kind of look at everything that comes after that same kind of not wanting to stay in a single place for too long continues throughout your career.
That's good.
Which is
That's
also cool. Again, you know, something I think is really commendable. What you've talked a little bit about it at various points during these interviews. About how you're getting ready to release something with Susanna Hoffs. So I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit about any, you know, upcoming projects that are coming up for you.
Sure, yeah. Well, let's see. There's a few things. Well, there's Susanna Hoffs and I. We've made two covers records already. Mm-hmm. They're called Under the Covers. They come out on a company called Shout Factory that some of the guys that once ran Rhino Records.
Yeah.
And we've done two, and we have a third one. We're just finishing mixing this week, and that looks like it will come out in November now.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, I am about to launch a Kickstarter to make a new album, and I'm also doing some sort of project with – I don't know if you know, I do pottery. I've done pottery for many years, and I sometimes sell it at my shows. And I've started to learn and get into the world of 3D printing to make prototypes of objects and things. I met J.J. Abrams, the guy that runs a Bad Robot production company. And I'm a sci-fi nut, kind of, and we hit it off. Ultimately, in my Kickstarter thing, there will be objects that are available in the, you know, as you get up the ladder of whatever you buy into. There are going to be some special things. We're going to do a show at Bad Robot where a very limited amount of people can come out and go to the show, you know, on one of the packages. We're going to make a 11.1 surround sound mix of the album because Fred Maher works for DTS now. Hmm. So he has access to state-of-the-art laboratory surround sound stuff. So he's going to do a whole mix. And we're going to also have a thing where you come to DTS with Fred and I and you can hear the whole thing in surround sound because those systems are barely even out.
Yeah.
They fold down into smaller amounts. So we have these kind of wacky, cool things that are involved in the project,
yeah.
and I get to do some things with some friends of mine. And so I will be making an album of my own, and I'm going to try to make sure it's really great. So I'm kind of like building up the sort of serious feeling and stamina, and then I'm going to write a bunch of new songs, and we're going to do the best we can.
And we can
record them.
We can get updates on all that stuff probably on your website or Facebook.
Yeah,
or
website or Facebook. We'll be sending out the word however we can. My fans have a pretty good network of with each other, so I think we'll be able to spread the word pretty well. And I'll be out doing some of these shows, so maybe I can kind of talk it up a little bit, you know. I've also been really involved with a new movie called Big Eyes. That's about this 1960s artist, Margaret Keane. I used one of her paintings on an album of mine called In Reverse in the late 90s. And it's this amazing story of this guy, Walter Keane, who presented himself as a painter of these famous big-eyed children thing in the late 50s, early 60s. But his wife was really the painter of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this kind of amazing story of the two of them. And some friends of mine who are screenwriters wrote a script 10 years ago about them, and it finally is getting made. We're thrilled beyond belief. I've gotten to be a consultant on it and help them a ton. It's directed by Tim Burton and starring Christoph Waltz, who won the Oscar this year for Best Actor for Django Unchained, and as Walter Keane, and then Amy Adams is playing another Oscar. Did she win an Oscar this year? I think she might have. Another Oscar person, actor, is playing Margaret Keane, the actual artist. So they've started filming just in the last couple of days. So that's
wow.
a tremendously exciting thing that I've done kind of a lot of work for. My wife and I have collected the art from this artist and the explosion that happened right after of other artists that made prints in that kind of 1960 to 64 sort of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of aspects of it that touch on what we've been into for so long, you know, so that's been a real thrill. They've had three times it's almost gotten made, every time with different actors, but our favorite ones are these, so it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's finally filming.
That's some luck.
Yeah,
some very
so
good luck.
That's been another thing I've spent some time on, talking about developing some iOS apps. We have a couple apps we want to make pretty bad for iPad and iPhone. We're going to try and make a power pop one. I have a couple instrument ideas. We'll probably do a big-eyed app about the history of big-eyed art. So, you know, there's a lot of little ideas. I kind of feel really creative right now, so I'm psyched about doing music again. That's my album. That's not covers. You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a there's a lot going on and a lot to look forward to. And I think it's also part of the reason why I really appreciate you coming back or coming to us and kind of taking a look back in some ways at these records that are kind of a part of the past, but also a part of the present and part of the future. You know, I mean, that's
awesome.
The thing about
I love
great
keeping,
music.
Keeping it alive. And you're wonderful. All the things you've said.
Well, I really can't thank you enough again for coming in. Just thank you so much for coming
please.
In.
Please,
it's
my
this.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
So we're going to play one more song from Matthew Sweet and this record, Altered Beast, which is once again celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. The name of the song is Falling, featuring some stellar guitar work from Richard Lloyd, and you're hearing it right now on KPFK 90.7 FM in Melting Pond.
have fun and you're calling, calling, calling. She can't get home. Every day takes something away until there's nothing left to say. No single word can deliver you. Yeah.